Here to talk is Paul Soma. He's superintendent of Traverse City Area Public Schools. Paul, thanks for coming in.
No problem. Thanks, David.
Let's talk about the possible closing of up to three elementary schools in the district. How does it look right now?
Well, you know, we're in process right now that we started, you know, a few months ago now of educating the community and talking with the various schools and the communities being impacted. I think our process has been really well received, and I'm really pleased with the dialogue that we've created with the community. So we're in a dialogue with those communities there. They have looked at the value streams associated with their school and our school system and the state of Michigan, and are actually actively presenting what they believe are good options for us to move forward. And so once those options are in hand, we'll be analyzing them soon.
You told me that the district could make recommendations as soon as this month.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
I think the recommendations will come from administration to the board in January now. I think that the timeline just needed a little extra time to have the dialogue with the communities, and I didn't want to rush that. So we're looking at January as a timeline to actually move it to a board conversation.
But still quicker than the last time you considered closing schools
right.
in 2007.
Yeah, that was a two-year process that lasted even longer than that as we implemented the closing. So yeah, we're trying to do this in a little more streamlined fashion this time.
So you've had meetings at schools with parents mm-hmm. and with other community members. Mm-hmm. You've formed some of these advisory committee groups.
Yep, focus groups, yep.
What have you learned so far that you didn't know before?
It's a very good question. It's a great question. I think the knowledge transfer, it's really been back and forth. And so, you know, just off the top of my head, as I reflect on a couple of our meetings that we've had recently with the focus groups, that there's a lot of values that we're aligned, that are aligned together when we talk about, you know, high quality and high caliber education, sustainable education, and curriculums, options for parents. These are things that are valued by our community, and people want to see those continue. Where we diverge a little bit is location, that, you know, obviously a community might value this location right here. And we value, you know, all students having an opportunity regardless of what location, you know, that's there. It's really the only differences. The other thing that we've learned as certainly in talking to the folks at International School at Bertha Voss, they have a strong value for the IB curriculum. And the value isn't as much about the building there. It's they want that curriculum. And, you know, people get it when you say there's, you know, not that many kids in the building. They get that, okay, well, it might not be sustainable here, but we really would really like to see TCAPS find a sustainable model somewhere that our students can access an IB model. So those are some of the things we're learning. Just to finish that comment, though, I've been very impressed by listening to the focus groups and what they have learned about what TCAPS environment that we work in, the issues surrounding our funding, the issues around the resources and the limited resources that we have, the issues around the decline in student population. That's become shared knowledge, which I think then helps us have a shared solution.
Let's talk a bit about those trends in enrollment. If you look at the entire intermediate school mm-hmm. district in this countywide mm-hmm. District, the total number of students is down 10% in 10 years. Mm. What would prevent you from closing these schools? I mean, when you look at these trends in enrollment.
Right. A turn in that trend. New students, right? So that would be one thing that would prevent that. It doesn't necessarily, you stated the reality very well. Regardless of what school you're looking at, when you lose 10% of your population in a 10-year time frame, something has to give. At some point, something somewhere has to give. And in this case, you know, our three lowest enrollment buildings were really clear. And so they were a natural place for us to start the dialogue. And we didn't pretend to look at all the other buildings. It's, you know, these are the three that have the lowest enrollment. Let's cut to the chase and roll our sleeves up and get to work. And that's what we've done.
Is there an end in sight to shrinking enrollment?
There's a theoretical end. People say that our region ultimately will turn a page here. I don't see it in the near term, or even midterm for that to happen. To be clear, our region total population, based on what we're looking at, is actually growing. It's just not growing at the school age child, nor the really the childbearing couples, whatever household. Those two age groups are not growing. What's growing are what we know, seniors and older.
At the same time, though, what can the district do to attract more students? Because competition for students. And
yeah. Number one for us is we provide excellent programming. We provide comprehensive, high-quality program across a spectrum of alternatives. I mean, you know, even at the elementary, at this point, IB, Montessori, general ed, TAG. Same at the middle schools where we expand to the academically talented IB offering at this point. We expand our electives where you can band, music, sports opportunities, very comprehensive curriculum and extracurricular offerings, and we do it in an excellent fashion. That's number one. And people do choose us for those reasons. But number two, one thing that I think does get understated, we're very much involved in our international program, where we're working with schools from China and other places in the world to bring students to TCAPS. That's a growing program. In fact, this year we have approximately 50 students in our international program that are from China and other parts of the world. We're looking to expand that. That's something that has a real opportunity. It provides our school system with a real opportunity to fill some of the gaps that we're experiencing from a declining enrollment. So it's already offset us our decline by 50 students, and we expect that number to grow. There's going to be some exciting options that we're going to be looking at, like perhaps even creating an international center to house students from overseas. That could actually increase the numbers even further. We think that we're nowhere near the cap relative to how many students we could take from an international type of a perspective. And if we can add 200 or so, that could help offset some of these declines. It would be at the secondary level, though.
And those are offsets. We're not talking about being able to reverse these declines just with an international program. What are the solutions region-wide to, you know, reversing these trends, these overall trends?
Well, I want to be clear that it would help our school system immensely by adding another 150 or even another 200 students from an international setting. It would help from a lot of perspectives, not just the financial perspective, but it also broaden our perspective to be provide global awareness and global opportunities to the students that we currently have. When you're asking about how can society change the trend of the population and the dynamic of our population? What's in my mind? It's above my pay grade. I don't know how we create a situation where now we have growth in a population of students or school age children and young adults who are of childbearing years. I hear theoretically how we do that. I know that there are groups within our community who are actively exploring that alternative. We have to provide what affordable housing is part of that equation, jobs, sustainable jobs, that can sustain a family. Opportunities again for families to flourish. That's a greater community question. We are not the drivers of the decline in enrollment. We're the result of what's happening with us looking at closing buildings. That's a result of the decline. That's not a cause of the decline. It's a result. It's the other end of what people say. Oh, you're going to cause the population to decrease even more. No, the population is decreasing without us doing that. We have to respond to the fact that the population is decreasing. wanting the school-aged child population to increase, that's a greater community debate, and I see it going on out there. And you know, I don't think people sometimes understand the ramifications of what they talk about from a theoretical perspective.
Let's talk about some of the possible consequences of declining enrollment. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you've talked to me about and you've talked to parents about is the possibility that the fund balance of TCAPS would get below a certain level and the state would get involved in the district's finances. How bad would the budget situation have to be before the state started calling shots that people noticed?
Right. And I want to qualify that. That's if we don't respond, right? If we don't do something about the decline, that will lead to a continued degradation of our fund balance, and then the state would come into play. The state has indicated that at 5% fund equity, they consider a district in fiscal distress. And when you hit a fiscal distress, when you hit that level, the state now gets into your business. Now the state wants additional reporting. They want to know what you're doing. If you're not aggressive enough, they won't accept your reports. They'll expect you to, you know, make more reductions, ask for concessions of your employees, open up contracts. There's a lot of very negative consequences for getting to that number. We are operating at around almost 7% right now, and we certainly don't want to get too much closer to that 5% line.
The Traverse Bay Area Intermediate School District is in the middle of a 5-year plan that was drawn up a few years ago to reduce their fund balance, which was in excess of 50-some%. So the ISD gave $1.7 million to school districts in the district last year. They're giving something like $1 million this year, and that's significantly less to TCAPS. This is money that's, in some sense, extra because it has to do with the fund balance being reduced. It's not affecting the other services, as far as I know. Did you expect to get the same amount this year?
Well, the answer is I would expect to get more, frankly, given the level of their fund balance. I think that this issue gets clouded with complexities of, you know, what's the percentage of fund balance, what's the formula, when the real answer is they're sitting on $37 million. That's $37 million, and I think that's excessive by at least $20 million. And I think that what we ought to be talking about is really how many million dollars are in the fund equity and how much of that really is serving the needs of our region.
So you're saying that the ISD is just sitting on too much money, that it's not serving a purpose. What would be a more reasonable fund balance for them?
Right. 10%, I think, is a reasonable fund balance. And I think, you know, from my perspective, at $37 million, that's... If you took $10 million of that and put that into a capital account, they could address their capital needs. They operated about $60 million in a budget. Take $6 million and put it in a 10% fund balance and distribute the other $20 million. That would be part of a plan that I would suggest moving forward.
Is there a way to do that? I mean, the plan was drawn up just a few years ago. Obviously, you weren't superintendent then.
Mm-hmm.
What can be done now?
Well, yeah, I mean, they didn't implement the plan when it was first drafted, and the plan is complex and it's subject to interpretation, as we can see. And I think that complexity and the interpretation has clouded the dialogue. And I want to be really clear. I don't think it's a good plan, and I wasn't the superintendent then. I don't think it's a good plan, nor do I think it's being implemented the way it was drawn up. And I know that's you know, people interpret that different. I point to the example in the plan, which I could show you. I have right here.
What do you mean that it's not being implemented way it was drawn up?
Well, they gave an example of how it was intended to be implemented. Is that they would calculate the amount over 30%. And then take that amount and set it up on a 5-year distribution.
Right, 30% in the first year, right?
Yeah, that's it, right? And so that amount was supposed to be set aside, and that's again, and I think this discussion is a little too far in the weeds already. If they set aside that amount and they distributed their fund balance the way that it's described in the example provided in the plan, they would have met our budget this year, pretty close to it. And we probably wouldn't be having this dialogue. But to be clear, they didn't, you know, they distributed 1 million of their fund balance last year. Now they used the number 1.7, but the real number that their fund balance went down is $1 million, not 1.7 million. So 700 of that $1,000 did not come out of their fund balance. This is way too complicated of a discussion to have. The reality is this: they're operating in a structurally surplus fashion. They've used that surplus to pad their bank account, and now these funds, tens of millions of dollars intended to serve the needs of the children of this region, are sitting in a bank account. I think a better plan would be very simple and straightforward, and this is what I would say. One, stop billing locals for special ed transportation. The ISD still does bill backs. They bill us back for their transportation costs, so they're on the line for no expenditures related to transportation. The locals all pay for that. Number two, set aside $20 million and distribute that to the local school districts over the course of the next 5 years. That $20 million, so they set that aside. Also, they can then set aside $10 million for capital, and they'll have more than 10% left in their fund equity. That plan keeps them in a very safe financial position. Thirdly, and very importantly, they should do a systemic business review of their special ed service delivery model. And I believe there are efficiencies that can be gained by looking at that model, which would imply more resources for the region, and I believe a better reimbursement from the state of Michigan for the ISD and their special ed service delivery. That creates sustainability. So a model like that infuses the dollars back to the locals to be used for students and create sustainability for the ISD itself. And I think that would be better for the region.
There's a group of superintendents, right? You don't exactly vote, but you make your opinions known on where you stand on different things, like the budget, for instance, for ISD. And you guys met, was that in October?
Yeah, I'm not comfortable talking about what other superintendents say. ISD has made a big point of this, of talking about what other superintendents, and I don't think that it's being interpreted appropriately. But it is what it is, and I'm not going to speak for other superintendents. I want to be very clear. I'm speaking on behalf of the children of this region. I'm speaking on behalf of students who need support. And I just came from a building that I walked around and looked at what was going on there. And the principal, you know, and again, we're doing great work within TCAPS. We're doing fantastic work. But when you see the impact of poverty on an educational institution, we know that children who live in poverty, they've doubled. That percentage of children who live in poverty in this region has more than doubled since 2000. There's been cuts to mental health, cuts to the social support networks at the state level. That's playing out in our schools. And the principal said to me, if you don't think we're in an all-out war against poverty, drug addiction, mental health, you're not paying attention. And that's playing out. These are real people whose future depends on us providing supports for them to give them a chance in this world. Those supports can be purchased with that excess $20 million. They have $37 million in the bank. Keep $10 million for capital. Keep $7 million back for your 10% fund equity. That $20 million needs to be used to support the students who have the needs to make, you know, not doing that is going to add a huge cost to our community in the future. This is where we can make a difference.
We've talked about TCAP specifically. We talked a bit about regional questions. Let's talk about at the state level. Governor Snyder has a plan to send hundreds of millions of dollars to Detroit Public Schools to pay off its enormous debt. Mm-hmm. That money would come from the school aid fund, according to this plan, yep. Which kind of has stalled in Lansing. It really hasn't gone anywhere yet. Meaning districts like yours, like TCAPS, would likely get fewer dollars mm-hmm. per student. Mm-hmm. Are you worried?
I'm very worried. I'm worried about that at multiple levels. One, I'm worried about the children in Detroit. The governor is absolutely right relative to something needs to be done for the students of Detroit Public Schools, for other school districts that find themselves in the same boat. Now, what we do about that? That's a huge political and community and a challenge for our entire population, for the entire state of Michigan. I'm not sure what we do, but what I'm really worried about is it's going to be solved with dollars that are intended for our students. And when you look at even the numbers that have been thrown out by the governor's office, $50 per kid, that's over $500,000 for TCAPs that we would be on the hook for relative to a bailout of Detroit Public Schools. So I'm worried about that from many perspectives, but hopefully society is seeing. I really hope we need to raise awareness about the impact of poverty on students, whether they're students in our region or students in Detroit or students elsewhere. And if there's any hope, it's in education and it's in public education. And we have to know that's a real challenge for us. It's similar to a moral imperative. I believe it has an ethical and a moral aspect to it, and I'm going to continue to fight for it. So, you know, within that whole context, again, it gets complex. We have to look at the resources that we do have access to, and our community pays taxes for the ISD. It's different than local schools. Locals just get funded by the state. The ISD gets funded in multiple different fashions. One is a local millage, about $30 million per year. Those dollars are intended for the students of this region. They're not intended to sit in a bank account, and I'm going to continue to work toward freeing up some of those resources so that it can be used to impact our students and better our community.
Governor Snyder has said that when you look at his plan, he said this when it first was unveiled, and he first started talking about it in February, I believe. He said that you wouldn't see cuts to the school aid fund, that there would be increases to offset those cuts. What do you say to that?
Yeah, that's
do you trust that?
That simply just doesn't make sense. That simply doesn't bear itself out as something that is the money has to come from somewhere. And as we've demonstrated, at like for instance the roads, the school aid fund has been used to pay for roads. The governor and the legislature will make an argument that it hasn't, but very clearly the state took $250 million out of the school aid fund last March to balance the general fund. And in May, the general fund had a $300 million surplus. Instead of returning that $250 to schools, it was used to fund road issues. And so to say that somehow that they're going to spend $70 million or $100 million a year on Detroit Public Schools, but that's going to leave the rest of all schools harmless, that just doesn't add up. The math doesn't add up to that. That money's got to come from somewhere. And when you compound that with the latest road deal, in which I think they've identified they've said there's a $1.2 billion budget for roads or solution for roads, and $600 million has not been identified. They're going to find it from somewhere. Well, where is somewhere? I mean, it has to come from somewhere, and I think at any time, and certainly the last few years we've seen this, the school aid fund has been open game for any and all shortfalls at the state, and has been used to balance out the state. So,
is there any way to protect? Is there a way to protect the school aid fund from this kind of activity?
I don't think there is. If the legislature moves to amend the budget or move budgets around, I don't think there is. No matter how you skin the cat, the money has to come from somewhere. So if you say, oh, well, you're going to get the same amount that you would have got that you got last year, you don't get a cut. Well, had you not taken the money to pay for roads in Detroit Public Schools, we would have got an increase, and so it can get into this kind of verbal boxing match about, well, is it really money come from the schools or not? The problem is the problem. There's a shortfall in numerous areas within the state budget, one of them being highlighted as Detroit Public Schools, another one being highlighted as roads. Funding those two situations is going to mean less resource available for the entire state's school aid fund, the school budget.
I was at that meeting at Interlaken in October, late October, and one of the things you notice pretty quick is that the schools are meaningful for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. You know, they're seen as kind of community anchors in a mm-hmm. sense. How do you deal with those kind of considerations? The fact that people love these schools mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's an emotional issue. How do you come to terms with that when you're trying to make a decision, you know, looking at the long-term future?
These are not easy decisions. They're all hard decisions. And so, you know, in my experience, and I've been around for a while now, I've had to make tough decisions. I've had to be part of organizations, school districts, TCAP specifically, that's had to make choices, and they're difficult, difficult choices. I know that if it's not, for instance, saving on the overhead costs of a small elementary building, in other words, closing that building, if it's not that, then what we're going to have to do is be in front of, you know, some other group, whether it's the band parents or the sports boosters or the world language folks, whoever it is, will be in front of a different group of people saying, we're going to cut the programming for students because we're going to keep open small elementary buildings. So, you know, that's the way I grapple with this. The other thing is that, you know, I do understand how emotional it can be. My children went to Norris Elementary School, and we closed Norris Elementary School while my children went there. We set up good systems to make sure that children are looked after, that families are incorporated into new schools, and children are very resilient, and we make sure to provide supports for them so that they'll be welcomed and that they'll have a positive experience in such a transition. I know that's very difficult. There's not going to be an easy end on this one, but we have to do it, or else what happens is we get to that 5% fund equity level and the state comes in and then they start telling us what to do. And when they get here, then all of the emotion, they don't have emotion as it relates to these issues. They don't care about a school or a program. They care about a bottom line, and the bottom line better balance or else. And so, you know, I know that it's the lesser of evils relative to what we're trying to do in balancing the budget and creating sustainable structures going forward. I also know that it's about in that sustainability, making sure that the resources that we're devoting resources to are educational priorities. And that's a key element to what we're doing. And if, you know, keeping open small elementary schools, while that's nice if you're able to do it, it doesn't fit the mold of a key educational priority moving forward. And therefore, that would be something that we'd consider doing before, like, cutting programs.
Paul Soma is superintendent of Traverse City Area Public Schools. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, David. I appreciate it.